Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome into KER Politics. Big Stuffed Up Al is here with you, along with his, certainly his co-host, Jim McKinney. We're going to talk about a number of issues today on KER Politics. We're going to start out how I personally believe China is winning a major war with the United States. The average American doesn't even know that we're at war with the Chinese right now, but trust me, when Jimmy and I used to spend a lot of time interviewing a gentleman from the Epoch Times by the name of Josh Phillips, the Epoch Times is spot on when it comes to how they feel China is taking over the U.S. China is doing it through the minds of people who American citizens who don't even know it. Jimmy brought up a good example of that when we were talking off mic and preparing for the show. Jimmy talked about all you got to do is look at the press. I would bring up all you got to look at the amount of illegal drugs that are coming into this country, and a lot of that is being facilitated by China. Jimmy, you're on, bud.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind that the Chinese are using what Josh Phillips from the Epoch Times talked about previously on our shows as the unrestricted warfare policy, basically in all aspects of power, using every avenue that they possibly can to influence and to, without military action, overtake people. Now, you know, this is not new. The United States, for really since World War II, has been involved in exporting ideology, and not as a conscious effort, but because of the success of the United States and the desire for people to be associated with it, our media, our information, our quality of life, the aspirations, and then the freedoms that were actually afforded to Americans became a really strong precedent that actually people love to be involved with, Hollywood movies, all kinds of things. Yeah. Now that's actually turned kind of a corner to where now those same those same institutions or organizations that used to spread American information or propaganda, as people would call it, are now actually spreading Chinese propaganda and being used very effectively by an authoritarian regime in order to control people in many, many different ways. And I think, you know, when you look at the NBA and how they've kowtowed to them, when you look at large big tech companies like Microsoft and Apple and how they've bowed down to the Chinese with their technologies, when you look at almost every major manufacturer that now operates out of China to save a few bucks, you see that they have bowed to the woke ideologies and to the influence of an authoritarian government while bashing the same liberties and the freedoms that made them rich in the first place in America. And
you know, Jimmy, when you talk about woke ideologies, I did a fair amount of reading on that this week, and it's interesting. The Chinese, I give them credit for being too smart to not get involved in woke ideologies. Woke ideologies really are, in my opinion, one of the ideologies, or a group of the ideologies, or if you want to call it that, that are going to take down the United States. Give me your comments on what I just said, Jim.
So the Chinese do not buy into the same thought processes that are being perpetuated in American pop culture right now.
Right.
You know, they don't. In fact, they just outlawed feminine male characters in any of their media. They outlawed gay appearing men. They outlaw anybody that has any question about their policies, and it's against the law. You will go to jail if you question Chinese government policies. At the same time, they are perpetuating and helping facilitate organizations through a variety of means. Through information flow in America, through influential corporate media outlets, and actually having those big companies perpetuate these same ideologies that they won't support in their country, but they're actually forcing them to respond in the United States to Black Lives Matter. You know, the massive funding that maybe much of corporate America provided to a bunch of crooks and people on a false narrative. the arguments with the teachers unions, you know, these are, again, socialist ideologies and, you know, that are, you know, trying to spread gender identity to kindergartens around the nation. And
yep.
Randy Weingartner, the head of the teachers union, just basically said this is like warfare. These are the ideologies that they, the Chinese, through very sophisticated methods, are spreading on us while they protect themselves from the same thing. And they fund it, they resource it in many ways. They support it in the U.S. They love the division. And of course, that is what will be the demise of this nation if, in fact, people don't realize and wake up what's happening.
Yeah. You know, the question I have is, how effective do you think the Chinese are in getting into the minds of American citizens? I would have to say on a 1 to 10, they're probably at about a 9. What do you think?
Well, I'd say the best example of Chinese influence on the American psyche, and the media, again, these corporations perpetuated it, was the COVID-19 response. COVID-19 in particular, how they used social media, how they used U.S. mainstream media corporations to perpetuate this myth that COVID was going to kill everybody, and then to show the fear and the panic of how they responded, which set a precedent which shut down our economy in the United States because of popular pressure from the media and these corporations that were selling that. And of course, that is directly linked to the pharmaceutical companies that have been involved in perpetuating and influencing people to get these vaccinations, where they're making a fortune as they're being paid by the government. And of course, that's our taxpayer dollars. People complain about giving, you know, $1 billion to Ukraine, but we're giving hundreds of billions of dollars to pharmaceutical companies to actually hurt our lives. So that's yep. how the Chinese have created fear and panic in the Americans. And yes, it is very much influential and controls America right now with those types of fears and panic.
Yeah. I have to say that the war is being won, and it's not being won by Christianity or Judaism, if you want to call those major philosophies, and I certainly do. It's being called by wokeism, which is a major philosophy that I am deeply, deeply against, for lack of better terms. I think I would go so far as to say, I think that the woke philosophy is one of the largest disincentives that are out there. You know, being strongly incentivized by the way life in the United States used to be, capitalism, et cetera, is one of, and a sense of honesty, is one of the things that made America a great country, Jim. And unfortunately, right now, having just spent a bit of time in Seattle and seeing firsthand what's going on down there with the tent cities, et cetera, we are very, very definitely away from being one of the strongest countries in the world. And I think the answer, quite frankly, among our listeners who have gotten away from just spewing anger, for lack of better terms, I think the answer really comes in non-secular ways. Something that out-of-the-box Jerry has been talking about since he started on the show around the turn of the century, something that Holy Grail is now talking about. You know, I know that you and your family are very non-secular in the sense that you have a prayer session every evening with the family, and I certainly admire you for doing that. And I think that's one of the reasons that one of your oldest sons, I think, was a valedictorian at the high school, is because I think he's got high values. High values are what kept this country at one time really great. We no longer have high values. We now put up with what I would call aberrations, like tent cities, like people starving in some of these tents, etc., etc. I'm no longer proud of America, but I'm doing everything I can to try and make it a much better place. You guys, Jimmy and I are going to be back to take over the second half of KER Politics right after the top of the hour news. Listen, hope you do, and comment.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in back to KER Politics. We're going to talk a little bit about socialism right now, pure socialism, and also democratic socialism. We're going to talk about that with Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. Let's talk about socialism, Dr. Frieda. Give us your comments.
Thank you, Al. It's important to know that, Alexandria Cortez, she's the Bronx congresswoman, well, she would like to claim that we need to have a multicultural movement. But that's what she would like. So what? She wants to change our country from being a capitalistic country towards socialism. You know, we've been leaders in medicine, science, entrepreneurs, business. This is what makes America. Younger generations who voted for Bernie Sanders actually don't know what they're doing.
What else do you have to say?
So, we have been a leader in the field, in our world here, and not only in the field, but in our world. And Cortez needs to embrace our culture, or she needs to go back to a culture with socialism. But please don't try to change our country that has been so successful that the world looks to. There's no drive when there's socialism. And people actually have a high depression rate as well, because when you don't have the momentum to achieve, you're not using that energy. And if you're waiting for a government check, what happens? How much will that check really give you? And what will that check do? Because life is really about having a passion for something. And when we talk about democratic socialism, well, that's a system that values work towards some kind of help from the government. It supports an economy with money where people need to have jobs instead. So we really need to be able to have this drive to have something productive in our lives. And they even say people who are productive live longer. What can I tell you? You know, I have a little story to tell you about my father. And whether you want to hear it or not, I'm going to tell you. And this is what it is. When we came to America after World War II, the government gave us an apartment and food. And the first thing that he got was a brown jar, and he opened it up, and he didn't know it was peanut butter. Well, he was so upset, and he says, you don't give this kind of food to animals. So he went right out, and he went to look for work, and he walked instead of taking a bus because we didn't have any money. It took him a half a day. And the first time he walked into a tailor shop, he got the job because they heard his story, and I guess they felt sorry for him. And he is working for many years after that. But it just goes to show you. And then we went and we bought all kinds of food and we celebrated. But it just goes to show you what the work ethic is. I myself have worked since I was 12. Even today, what drives me has to do with a feeling, a sense of making a difference, of a sense of accomplishment. And most of all, being able to make a difference in somebody else's life. This is the way I've always functioned. This is the way I started my life, helping my parents when my mother couldn't speak English and she took me out of school so she could go shopping to the supermarket. But this is what I enjoy. And when I talk about these things, hopefully somebody will hear what I say and it can move them in the right direction. But no one is given something for free. This is a myth. When you feel good about yourself, it's only because you accomplished something on your own, not because someone gave it to you. And so this the distribution of wealth should mean distribution of personal resources. That's what we really need to distribute. Not that the government should give us, but what can we give to the government? How can we make money and deserve it? You know, when you earn it, the feeling that you have, that something that you worked for, you educated yourself. There are many immigrants that come to this country, and they're very successful. Forget about the excuses. Forget about being a minority. Collecting free checks from the government devalues your worth if you're able to work. There are too many people who want a free ride. And those people, if you look at them, they're not happy. They're not getting their needs met. What are they really getting away with? As I said, my father always wanted to work. If there was nothing to do, he would ask, give me something to do, because he knew, even Freud said, work sets you free. You have to work in order to play. And this is something that I grew up with. This is something that has driven me. And when you give, that's where happiness comes from. It's definitely not from taking.
So what you're saying is you kind of don't approve of pure socialism. That's what you're saying, correct?
Absolutely. Pure socialism is the government controlling you and ruling what you're doing. And who wants that? That's too high a price to pay. When you're talking about democratic socialism, something that Bernie Sanders tried to accomplish, and that is supporting middle-class people who are not making as much money, that's something else. But then we have to be careful. There's a fine line to know who to support, who is working, who is taking advantage of the government. It's not about the government doling out money to anybody. It's about helping people who are middle class, who are working hard to get through with education and with help and with other resources.
You know, it's interesting, but one of our recent presidents, Bill Clinton, was very, very definitely against welfare because as he said the same thing that the psychiatrist who you quoted said, he said, you know, one of the biggest disincentives in the world is welfare. If people don't want to work, they're going to be unhappy. The America could not have accomplished what it wanted to accomplish if it was not filled with immigrants who realized, truly realized, the value of work. I feel that way very, very strongly. You know, one of the reasons I'm a conservative is I think we even take it one step farther in the sense that we really, I mean, absolute welfare when it is needed is certainly necessary. But welfare where it is not needed, where you have entire demographics of people that are living off the government, that's not good for the country. And Frieda, as you know, it's also not good for them. And that's the one thing that I think could very definitely bring down America. And I'm very, very, I don't want to say negative, but I am very, very apprehensive about the future of America. And I'm looking forward to, no doubt, the election, the next major election coming up in 2024, because I think that's going to tell the tale of the tale.
Absolutely. Dr. Frieda, I can't wait. Thank you. And by the way, we're all immigrants. Let's face it.
I know we are. I know the way. And by the way, thank you so much.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back to the second half of the KER Politics with Corlin and Jim McKinney. And, you know, we finished up the first segment talking about wokeism and some of the issues. And, of course, most importantly, China's influence on the United States and how that's very dangerous. And I want to highlight, Al, that how important it is for people to understand you don't have a say in an authoritarian controlled country like China. A very small group of people make a decision on your future and, of course, hold you accountable legally to their ideologies. And, you know, I've been reading a lot of our bloggers and I've been listening to a lot of people that think that somehow a small group of intellectuals will be a much more effective leadership style than a democratic republic. You know, democracy is dangerous, and of course that's, you know, been highlighted way back in the day with the Greeks saying it's the most dangerous form of governance. A republic is takes away kind of a little bit of separation of direct democratic control. So what's really important for people to realize is the foundations of our government with separation of powers and the opportunity to change that direction with the courts and, of course, the Congress and then the executive branch. If any one of those gets too much power, you're in trouble. And that's what we've seen here in America. You commented, and I'll push it over to you here in a second, but you commented before we went to the break that you're not so proud of America anymore. And, you know, I'm going to look at the longer haul, and I'm incredibly proud of America for what it's meant and how well it's done to help benefit and make people's lives so much better around the world, and how capitalism and our system has made a better world. But that's a threat right now. And I think that's what we're talking about. Though politically, and I want to get your ideas on this, politically, the Biden administration, the Democrats, are facing a very big challenge because of exactly these woke policies and the influence of China right now. There is pushback growing. Do you see any of that, Al?
You know, I see a bit of it, Jim, but I don't see as much as I think as you see. And let me kind of go on a little bit here about that. I spent Easter in Seattle, and I only bring that up because I don't go to Seattle very often anymore. But I want to get back to your comment about why I'm not proud of America. I'm in an environment, Jimmy, where I talk with a lot of very intelligent people. People like the former chief attorney for the city of Seattle, et cetera, et cetera. In social settings, I talk with people like that. I asked him in a social setting once, I said, what are you guys going to do about the homeless problem? And he said, nothing. He said, the head attorney for the city of Seattle said, we're not going to do anything. There's nothing we can do about that. Now, eventually, when I drove into Seattle last week, I got about as far as, I would say Northgate, which is about 175th, which is pretty well outside the downtown core. And I started to notice tents. I started to notice many, many more tent cities in Seattle than I saw on previous trips, although I'm not sure that they've grown. I know that they're dangerous. I read articles in the Seattle Times every day about how one of the main downtown streets, Third Avenue in Seattle, is being completely overrun with crime, and how it's now a center of focus for the Seattle Police Department, and they are very, very inefficient in terms of cleaning that up. I was told by a politician that Seattle is no longer, I'm sorry, a local politician, that it is no longer to go shopping, and no longer free to go free, safe to go shopping in downtown Seattle. Jimmy, that's why I'm no longer proud of my country, because the city of Seattle, which is a major urban area, isn't doing anything to try and alleviate the crime.
Well, and there is no question in these major urban areas that have been controlled by Democratic politicians that focus on defunding the police, on woke policies, taking these actions that are actually undermining the safety and security of their own population. That's come to a head, you know. And really, the summer of 2020, the political riots, the BLM and Antifa riots that overtook the country, clearly has identified the weaknesses in that system. And that's why I am confident that people are turning away from that. They're tired of listening to a government official tell them that they are, that the parents are not responsible for their children, that the government official or the teacher is going to teach their kindergarten about transgenderism and help them identify who they are, and they'll do it behind their parents' back. They're tired of illegal border crossings, and they're tired of this kind of corrupt destruction of our safety and security.
Yep.
And the numbers are becoming quite clear. Hispanics, from a 65 to 68% support of the Biden administration when he took power, the Biden regime, Hispanics are now in the 35% range of approval for Biden. That's a huge over 30% drop in support. Black community, 30% drop in support. Democrats are moving in droves saying, I will never vote Democrat again because of exactly the issues you're talking about. And our system is not perfect, and there is no question. But with a decentralized system where people live in those areas and are responsible for electing their local officials, they either are completely blinded by the media and the control that we talked about in the first segment, or they're going to push back. And I'm seeing what happened in Virginia with a complete overtaking of Virginia senior government officials by Republicans or conservatives. I see that happening a lot in a lot of places. Columbia, right here in South Carolina, first time in like 40 years, elected a Republican mayor and city council. These are big changes in some of these areas where people are, just fed up with it. They're fed up with the control.
Jimmy, off mic, we were talking this morning. You wanted to bring up something specifically during the second segment of the second hour. Something that Rachel Maddow said last night.
Oh yeah, so let's. This is good. We'll finish this segment out. So Kevin McCarthy, the House Speaker, is on video or on audio tape with Liz Cheney and other House leaders on the 10th of January, 2020, saying that he thinks Trump should probably resign. Because of the January 6th events, and he probably won't do it. Of course, McCarthy's coming back and saying, you're taking it out of context. You don't see what the real truth is here. But the reality is McCarthy, McConnell, these guys that basically have succumbed and bowed down to the pressures of the media and the left continue to show weakness. And I think it's going to be very painful for him to keep his leadership role for a while. But at the same time, who leaked it? And my guess is probably Liz Cheney and other never Trump type folks who are trying to undermine, possibly they may have done it, people that actually support Trump that want a clean house. And that's an interesting thought, too. That can be going either way.
Jim, we got less than a minute left here. I want you to opine on this question. And if you can answer it quickly, that would be great. And if you can't, I'd like to get into it in the next segment. What do you view as being Liz Cheney's political future?
Oh, I think she's going to get trounced in the primary in Wyoming. At least I hope so. Though she's going to stick around as a pundit. There's going to be a lot of money and resources because there's a lot of never Trumpers out there that think they're above, they look at the party and the old school method that the big powerful should control and lead. Exactly what people are frustrated and tired of.
Well, I kind of feel sorry for her because I think she's way off base in her philosophy, in my opinion. I really respect her dad, Dick Cheney, and I really have to wonder exactly why Liz went ahead and made such a close personal alliance with the progressives. I think that was a big, big mistake on her part. Stick around. You guys are going to be right back to wrap up KER Politics. Welcome back here to Wrap Up KER Politics. I'm starting to think that the answer to our problems in the world today really lie in non-secular issues. The wokies of the world are not going to let that happen because discussing anything that is non-secular is taboo to them. Any comment on what I just said, Jimmy? Then we'll get on to other issues.
I think very important to have a moral base, right? And we won't survive without it.
Nope.
And that's very clear because if you give up morality from a faith perspective and don't think there's something higher above you, then you give it over to the government.
Yeah.
And then your government is your God and the government will take control. And that's the problem. That's what the problem is in Seattle. Because there is very little faith, very little few people that actually have much faith left there.
Yep.
And across the entire West Coast, people just don't have a moral standard, which means anything can go that you can get away with unless the government catches you. And if the government catches you, then they're restricting you. If they restrict you, well, then you either bow down to it or you fight it. And this is where it's so why we face these people on the outside with drug, homelessness, and all those other issues. There's nowhere that they can go that keeps them on a moral path to towards bettering their life.
I have to agree 100%. There's no question about that. None whatsoever. Jimmy, we got about 2 minutes left or 3 minutes. I'd like to talk more and more about how important the two upcoming elections are, both 22, which is kind of a little mini election, kind of a harbinger of things to come, and then certainly 24. I was asked yesterday at book club, and you know all the guys in our book club, who I thought were going to be the candidates for the Democratic Party. I didn't have an answer, which is kind of interesting. I had a very definite answer for candidates for the Republican Party, but I could not peg anybody from the Democratic Party. You got an opinion on that?
I think it's very interesting. Joe Biden came out of a pack of incompetent people in the 2020 primary. Right. For the Democratic Party. And the reason why he was selected was because all the other candidates were so bad.
Right.
And, you know, he was not a good candidate. I mean, he's not a good candidate. He's certainly not a good leader. But they managed to, with COVID, the lockdowns, with, you know, massive amounts of questionable voting practices in multiple key states, a bunch of money going in, they managed to control the outcome of that election. And I think right now, trying to identify someone in the Democratic Party that will have the bona fides, that will have a policy that would be moderate enough to actually benefit, and then have actually done the work that it takes to in preparation for candidacy, I just don't see anybody like that. The question is, will someone like a Bloomberg or a Eric Schmidt or somebody like that step in to try to save the Democratic Party after this November election? And I'll tell you, they got to start working on it pretty quick. I don't see anybody. I mean, somebody like Tulsi Gabbard, she might find a way to be on top of the Democratic Party, though the party hates her. It'll be so devastated, I believe, after November, if things are legitimate, that she could come out of it kind of in a positive way. I think she would gain a lot of moderate voters. Not that I would support her, but I know a lot of people would.
What about Mitt Romney jumping ship and going over to the Democrats?
I think that would be hilarious to watch, because the Democrats don't trust him either. They like it. They like people that will cross boundaries for their interests. But believe me, they will eat their own. And if he tried to do that, it would show exactly what type of a backstabbing guy he is. And he is a backstabber. I just want to remind people that
he asked
for Donald Trump's endorsement and then turned around and tubed Donald Trump. He got elected because of it, and is senator in Utah. And I think that is exactly what type of a character he is. For himself, beneficial, and he thinks he's an elitist, kind of like Liz Cheney, that thinks they know better than the rest of us. And I'm kind of tired of that.
Okay, let's flip over to Hillary Clinton.
I think she's done. I don't think that there's possibility for her to actually survive the corruption and the issues that are facing her. I think she's going to face, with the Durham investigation, there's going to be more information that comes about her campaign. There is plenty of it right now that shows the corruption that was involved there.
Unfortunately, nobody's believing it, though.
Well, I mean, facts are facts, right? So when it comes to a court case, it doesn't matter whether the people that support her believe it or not. If she gets fined, and she did, by the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, fined the DNC and her campaign because of illegal practices on how they funded things. Those types of things grow and they sow doubt. But there'll be much more with Sussman and probably Mark Elias, the Democratic lawyer, as well as the researchers that were involved here. And it'll come right back to the Comey FBI and the Attorney General's office and some of the ridiculousness that came out of there.
I don't know. You know, you mentioned Tulsi Gabbard. I was kind of enthralled with Tulsi a little bit a while ago. But you know what? I think when you're characterized as a very active young woman who's, you know, known for her surfing prowess, et cetera, I think her age is going to jump in there and kill her. I don't think she's viewed as being sophisticated enough to be a candidate for president.
Well, She's getting a lot of media in conservative circles, and they allowed her to speak at the recent Republican or conservative convention out in Florida. And she's been on TV quite a bit. Her name's still out there. So of the candidates that are out there, she might be able to get that moderate group. You know, Bernie Sanders is putting out an exploratory team to do it again. Now, I think that's insane, but it would be great from my perspective, it would be great because it would just further split the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right now, I just want to see that. I want to see them destroy themselves.
Okay, let's get down to the big question. Is it going to be DeSantis or is it going to be Trump?
You know, it's hard to judge. I think DeSantis would have a huge advantage. He's going to focus on the governorship, this race that's coming up for him in November. He'll win it. He'll win it hands down. He's done a phenomenal job there. And, of course, they've done some interesting things politically and to ensure that that goes forward with support in his House and his legislative Senate. So he's done a phenomenal job. I believe he would be a great candidate, but I think Trump would still have the advantage if he takes it. We'll see what his age, you know, what he thinks about it, and if he's willing to support someone else. Trump, I think, is in a great position right now. He's getting more and more. People are lamenting the fact that he didn't win in the independent category.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot more support. So, and his basic policies and principles, you know, are pretty consistent. So,
well, Trump's policies are pretty consistent. There still are a lot of ill feelings toward Trump. I think I have to say, certainly, again, certainly with the progressives, I am just starting to realize what a great job that Trump did when he was a president of the United States. And I would probably go back and support him in 24. You can take out the word probably. I think he's a big enough of a bully that he could turn this country around, because it's going to take a bully to do it, Jim.
Well, that's what I argue. I've argued from the beginning. You need a big hatchet man to come in. Again, Trump didn't understand the depth of the corruption in D.C. He understood it at a surface level. He didn't realize how deep it was and how people in his own administration and his own party were there to undermine him because they didn't agree with his philosophies, because they're insiders and elitists like Romney, like some of his staff, you know, his key members of his staff. And he was advised, you know, he ran the campaign on a shoestring budget. And he did not, you know, he didn't spend the types of money that most people did, especially in the primary. So he didn't know. He had to go to other people, people like the Heritage Foundation, for recommendations on judges. He had to go to different conservative organizations to get volunteers to come in.
Yep,
and a lot
yep.
of them gave bad advice and put people in place and in power that actually were undermining him. I think he has a much better view of how that should operate. I
25
think
seconds,
much more
Jim.
Effective. I think he'd be much more effective in the future. And I think the staff around him would be much stronger, and he'd have to really cut a lot of the negative people out of D.C.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, our prediction. It looks like we both agree that it probably will be Trump in the next election. Hope you enjoyed the show.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.